Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I recently had the opportunity to interview Bill Binney, who is an NSA whistleblower. Well, I've also had the opportunity to interview Kirk Wiebe, who was his partner with others, colleagues there at NSA that blew the whistle on the thin thread program and the mass surveillance that's going on, something that Snowden did as well. But these are the guys that actually wrote the software. And I had an opportunity to bring Kirk Wiebe on and to talk more about things that are going on in the NSA and intelligence agencies. He also refers to Las Vegas and terrorist attacks. I think you'll be disappointed in some of the things he says about that. But he also has an uplifting, hopeful message as far as how we can help change this country and, you know, start getting the ship going in the right direction. But it's really important, the information that him and his colleagues are bringing forward. And it's a great interview with a ton of information. So I want to get into that interview now with Kirk Wiebe. Hi, Kirk. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. So nice to be with you.
Thank you so much for coming. There's so many important things that we need to talk about, and you're one of the best people to address this with me. So I'm really glad that you decided to join us.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Well, you worked on the thin thread program with Bill Binney and have intimate knowledge of NSA's surveillance program. Do you believe the latest high-profile terror attacks could have been stopped by the NSA if the NSA was more focused on smart analysis versus just mass surveillance?
Absolutely. You know, every time one of these terrorist attacks happen, and we see the scenes on television with limbs and bodies and things, it's absolutely sickening. Not just to look at, but to realize that the NSA and others in partnership with NSA have spent billions of dollars telling us they need to collect all this information because they're going to do something for us. Well, every time I see a successful terrorist attack, I say, what are you doing for us? What we're doing is allowing terrorists to attack. They kill people, and we clean up the pieces. And then I see politicians congratulating each other that they worked so well with the local police. And I'm saying, tell that to the people lying in the street.
Exactly. Tell it to the people, the victims of this latest situation.
Exactly.
Do you think Las Vegas could have been averted if they had a smart analysis tool or were using it?
No, I do. It gets a little tougher in the States because of some of the laws, but it's still the same issue. You know, we have a legal system that says if you're innocent and you're not doing anything wrong, we have no cause to come after you. So our legal system says we have to have some sense that you are up to something that is no good. And we can then go to a court and ask a judge for permission to issue a warrant, get the warrant, and then come after you. Surveillance, intelligence, production is all about, it's kind of like journalism, Sarah. It's kind of like what you do. Mm-hmm. You look for things of interest. You investigate them. You put together evidence, a story, except in your case, you don't have to ask permission, except maybe if you have an editor or the owner of a publication. But in the legal system, you simply put together your story, your evidence, and go to a judge and ask for permission. There's nothing foreign about that process. It's been with us for over 200 years. Just because surveillance is electronic doesn't say it isn't possible to do the same thing. It's gathering information. And if you have a case, we should be going to a judge. But the problem is, I don't know that NSA has the right tools in the hands of analysts to see the subtle changes in people. And this is important. I have a suspicion we're going to find out this guy in Las Vegas may have had signs of mental illness or instability. They just weren't reported. Look what happened at the Virginia Tech shooting years back. And all those kids were killed. Terrible, terrible tragedy. But the data that would have tipped off authorities to it was locked in a mental health database and not shared because of HIPAA rules with enforcement authorities. So, you know, there's some common sense things we have to do to allow enforcement people to access information and trust them with it and punish them if they misuse it. But so information, you know, it can be your friend or it can be your foe, depending on how it's used. But I'm trying to say that law enforcement, I think, generally has the right idea. I just don't think they have the tools. So in the case of Europe, you point these other cases. These people were known to be wanted people. They were on watch lists in Europe when they rented trucks and drove through crowds and the like. And it's really, in my mind, no excuse not to have stopped those tragedies. Because if you're on a list, we know we should be watching you, surveilling you, right? Legitimately so. We have some sense that you're a bad person. And we shouldn't have missed things like a credit card transaction at a truck rental business. So a guy, the name of which you know, is renting a truck. Now, if you know about trucks and bad guys, they don't mix sometimes and they run over people. We should have followed that person. A lot of these rental trucks have locating devices built into them so that the people who own those trucks can track how they're being used, how they're being driven, where they're going, all of those things. So all of those capabilities are opportunities for people to properly catch bad people before they kill people. And that's what the real objective is.
Well, we have 350 million people or so in our country. So that coupled with people around the world, it could be coming from anywhere, whether it's our own people internal to the government or even bad guys externally. And do you think, you know, like the Las Vegas, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. The facts aren't adding up and things. Is it possible that if the agency itself has some bad guys in it, that they don't want that out?
Yes. It's been something I've worried about, is that the government really doesn't want anyone to get too good at knowing everything, whether it's NSA or anyone else, because the government has plans, it has thoughts, and I'm not sure itself wants to be self-surveilled, because you begin to see things that are going on, and I'm not sure those in power want that kind of power to be used inside the government as well. It's troubling that we aren't even sure who to trust anymore. You know, we have this deep state issue, we have patriots, but I couldn't tell you today who the patriots are, who the deep staters are. I don't have names, but we are kind of in a democratic mess in terms of how the government's not functioning, in terms of the three pillars of our government. They're all three corrupt to one degree or another. And so it's very tough to sort this stuff out.
Well, I'm going to get in this other question. I'm going to skip to this and get back to something else I want to ask you. But that brings me to, you know, intelligence agencies are actively partaking in disinformation tactics. And you don't know, you know, if we can't trust what's going on, how do we know when we're looking at disinformation? And how do we know when we're looking at the real stuff? I mean, it's really hard.
It is very hard. Now, it's possible to do it, but you need people of integrity doing that. People that you can trust. I mean, look, Central Command, a command of the United States military, the Pentagon, if you will, was distorting in defense intelligence information to meet outcomes that were more pleasing to President Obama. I don't know if you knew that a number of military underlings, not generals, but people under working for generals, complained. I think there were 40 of them. I've lost track of the case. I wish someone would to report on it or update it. But there were 40 or 50 that testified that senior commanders were altering the intelligence facts for political reasons. And when you have that kind of willingness at the highest levels of the military, who do you trust?
Exactly. And when they've been caught lying so many times, you know, you're not going to believe them going forward. So what do we do? How do we bring this integrity back? How do you even know if, you know, I don't know if I'm a patsy for somebody that wants to spread disinformation. I don't know if other journalists are the disinformation agents. How can an average person know? Is there any kind of pattern? Is there anything that we can go off of? Because I would like to get better at it too, because I don't want to put disinformation out there.
Of course not. None of us do. There is nothing, you know, it really goes to the moral fabric of the nation. Who are we? What have we become as a people? You know, 50 years ago, more or less, reporters were pretty honest. You get pretty much a straight story. Today, you don't know who to believe, really. I mean, it takes a lot to establish credibility and integrity. And unfortunately, some of the people who do have integrity, such as yourself, in my belief, don't have the big audience, the big budget that the mainstream media has. So we have a mainstream media that has actually become a propaganda engine for a particular political cause, whatever it is, du jour. And it's so hard for the average citizen to get truth. And so thank God people like you are out trying to find a niche, a crack in all of this to get the truth out. But there's no quick answer. You know, it took us a long time to create a set of media and politicians who are more interested in manipulating truth and staying in power and making money and getting rich than it is serving anyone in the nation.
And that's what's so incredible. I just had Jake Morfonius on, and they had, for the Las Vegas situation, he had more people watching his stuff than all the mainstream media combined. And so they cracked down on him and shut down his channels, demonetized him. I had him on, and then my interview with them was shut down, or was demonetized. As soon as they demonetize, you get a lot lower views. They demonetized it, and then they turned it right back on, and now they demonetized it again after they already supposedly, you know, reviewed it. But that's a major news story. This guy's coverage is more watched and believed by Americans than all of the mainstream channels put together. And so it freaked them out. And the fact, you know, this, the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, to their credit, did an article on him, but that's it. Everybody else is ignoring it. Nobody's even talking about it. The fact that I was able to, you know, my little channel, although I'm growing and doing my thing, that I'm the only one that covered it. You know, it's like, what's going on?
Yeah. It's so hard to break through the noise that other people are making, to distort and discredit. I'm sure they tried to discredit the person you were just talking about. I'm sure, you know, people that are in power want to maintain that status quo. And they're very nasty and intolerant when it comes to people challenging it in any meaningful way. I kind of wish you and the others that are truly focused on integrity in journalism, on true investigative research and perseverance in digging at the truth would get together and multiply your resources by being together. Mm-hmm. and creating something more powerful than we have now. I don't know how else to attack that problem. Because, you could say that the American people themselves also have to demand it. And mm-hmm. I don't know why people don't yell louder. But they, too, will tell you, what do I do about it? What can I do?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, it's almost a case study of a whole industry being completely changed in a quick amount of time, and the people, the powers that be, are no longer, and they're trying to hold on to that power. It's interesting because it's the media. And in other industries, they fail and they do all these things, nasty things, to try to keep their power, but you don't see it because it's not media. This time it's media. So they have some extra tools in their toolkit by shutting down the other players. It's really a case study in business.
That's true. And a case study in democracy, because an uninformed people cannot rule themselves. They become puppets of those who are in control.
Exactly.
I worry about this nation being able to survive and hold on to its constitution and its status as a republic, where we try to protect the minority, when we now have majority positions in journalism and elsewhere stopping the minority from even having a voice, which is antithetical to our form of government. And with so much corruption across the three pillars of our government, Congress, the executive branch, the judiciary, they're supposed to keep the other ones in line, but they're all corrupt. And we're having a difficult time reconciling that. So people have asked me, what's the long-term result of this if it doesn't get corrected? And I can assure you, we will have some type of a civil breakdown. Well, it will happen.
Does it have to be violent? Can the breakdown be a peaceful breakdown? You know, I've started interviewing some people that are looking at new ways of setting up government and different things, just because there's these people out there that, you know, I try to bring all these different ideas. I love my country. I don't want it to fail.
Oh, absolutely.
But there has to be, you know, some solutions, and intelligent people need to rise up. People who care about this country need to rise up and figure out solutions. But does it have to be violent?
I don't know. That really depends on groups, some of whom are working actively to create violence. They want it. And we desperately try to avoid it. But if our platforms for discussion are the media, and that's gone for all intents and purposes because it's controlled by the few, and the message is controlled, not even reported in some cases. They don't, as you mentioned with your friend, they didn't even report it. It's censorship by ignoring the issue. So if we don't have a press that we can believe most of the time, if we don't have congressmen who are willing to shake up the status quo and go after those who don't act in our interest as a nation, and that are more interested in money and power, and if we don't go after the executive branch, especially the mighty intelligence community, who is staffed by lifetime bureaucrats wanting to protect their stakes, and it's all connected to politics. So when you look for this relief you're talking about, from what corner does it come?
Well, what does the rest of the world think?
Out there. Pardon?
Since you're in the Netherlands and you talk to people from all over the world, what's the rest of the world thinking?
Yeah.
As they're looking in, I mean, they must be scared knowing that we have so much military power as well.
They're not scared. They are almost cynical about it, because they too have their version of corruption. For example, here in the Netherlands, They haven't had a government formed in over a year and a half, and there's no end in sight. And it's because there are so many factions in the parliament, none of them can reach a consensus to partner with any other factions that they can get a government defined and formed and put on the table. So it's almost dysfunctional. It's kind of like they're stuck in the status quo and they can't change anything. So it seems as though, in much of the Western world anyway, Europe and the United States, this same kind of ambivalence and cynicism and inability to change anything is settled in, and I don't know what's going to bust it loose.
Well, yeah, I hope we can bust it loose without violence. That's what I'm worried about, because at some point the pressure cooker will happen. You know, you have to make change, otherwise it becomes like a balloon that's going to pop.
Absolutely, and that's what I worry about.
Well, what do you think is the most troublesome activities that the NSA and the government intelligence agencies are engaging in? Because I know you have a lot of information and you're digging in, and you know, with the whistleblower organization, you're trying to get that information out there and you're learning about all sorts of stuff. Besides mass surveillance, which is a major issue, what other things are they engaging in that you have seen?
Well, it's a byproduct of the mass surveillance. You know, ever since 9/11, you know, prior to 9/11, NSA's data was kept separate from the Department of Justice, for example. But now the FBI can look in the same databases NSA analysts do, and that data is shared with 14 or 15 other agencies within the government, such as the Drug Enforcement Agency.
Well, Obama just made that legal on his exit. He did an executive order 2 weeks before he was out of office.
Exactly right. Now, people say, why did he do that? Is he a law enforcement champion? He thought they needed more access to the data? No, that's not the reason. They already had it. So what was the other motive behind it? I think it was to allow more people who were politically friendly to the Obama-type regime, Democrats, to access data that could be used against people from opposing views, positions of opposing views, such as Republicans, libertarians, name it. For whatever reason, information is power. The more you can spread it out and share it, some of your people are going to be able to use it for wrongful purposes. And now we have this suggested unmasking of people in the Trump administration. And I'm not going to play favorites. I only name Trump because he is the de facto president of the United States. And any effort by anyone to misuse NSA surveillance data for political outcomes changes pretty much delivers a death knell to our form of democracy.
Because
it really does. Now, I'm also aware that the Drug Enforcement Agency and Department of Justice are using, or at least were, I don't know if they still are, but I have no evidence they're not, using NSA data to accuse people in a court of law. It's called parallel construction. I don't know if Bill Binney discussed it with you. But this is where, excuse me, I'm going to turn off this phone. This is where the Justice Department is spying on people, potential criminals, people they want to go after. They go in front of a court, but they don't tell the judge and they don't tell the defendant's attorney what information they're looking at. And in order not to be accused of wrongdoing, they make up an old-fashioned investigative story that police went out and discovered this and found that. So they make sure the written offering is based on old-fashioned blessed techniques when, in fact, they're using surveillance data to go after these people. Now, this denies people their rights to a fair trial and to face their accuser because they're never told it's that data.
Well, can't they and they can make up whatever they want, and the data can be skewed in ways to make it look like
Oh,
you're.
absolutely. That's the other part of it.
So you can pretty much take out anybody you want.
Yeah. And that's the danger in all of this. They can take out or blackmail congressmen. We don't know how they're using all this information. We know it's spread out there, and the more it's spread out, the more dangerous it is because someone's going to be willing to use it in wrongful ways. We even know NSA analysts were spying on ex-girlfriends and wives. It was called Love Int. You've heard of Sig Int and these different ints. It was called Love Int. NSA got caught and they admitted it, said they were sorry, and it would never happen again. Now, you tell me, people cannot resist looking into this information for whatever reason.
Exactly. And I think if it has to do with money, it can get pretty scary. And if people don't care, have any empathy over others, they can use it whatever to do whatever they want.
Well, that's it. And we were talking a minute ago, what do we do? It's not a quick fix. It's a moral problem. It's a ethics issue of what's right and what's wrong. And if you look back at the evolution of the United States, the backbone of right and wrong was really our Judeo-Christian values that we had inherited over the centuries and the various laws that had been passed down to us. As those values have waned with time, and church is not as popular as it used to be, I ask the question, who is providing the conscience of what is? Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and I know that a lot of schools, a lot of business schools are making requirements to learn ethics, which is great. That's a great step forward. But it's almost everybody. I mean, we need hardly anybody even knows. I taught ethics last year at the University of Minnesota. Hardly anybody even knows what ethics is.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
it's, yeah. And so if you don't have a religious background and then you don't even know what ethics is, how do you? And if you weren't, if you've been abused yourself, which there's a lot of abuse now what do we do?
Exactly. And I asked the question as well. If you don't have ethics, and first of all, ethics, as you said, have to be defined. What do we mean? We have now what we call, and we're proud of, the diverse workspace. You can have multicultural people in a enterprise, in a factory. All of them from different cultural backgrounds, different religions. And if you're not putting a very defined list of expected behaviors that define the ethical parameters in your organization, I guarantee you, you're going to have disagreements, different ways of viewing things, different behaviors that you may consider wrong, but someone else doesn't. And the whole system of orderly management of people kind of falls apart. And
Exactly. It's
yeah.
kind of, you know, there are some good environments, a lot of good companies that
There
bring
are.
in, yeah, and they're very serious about creating ethical environments, but there's so many others that aren't, and the whole underbelly of our country is kind of, But you know what? I want to talk about some other things that I've heard that you've been looking into, which was really interesting. I listened to a conference that you did probably within the last month about directed energy weapons. And there's more and more people that are coming forward and saying that they are affected by this. What is your knowledge on the government's involvement with this and what's going on in that area?
Well, it's a hard one again to quantify because they keep it secret. It's not well known or understood. You know, it's another one of these areas of technology that people are almost fantasized by and mystified by, and they don't quite understand the world of radio waves. And most people have never seen a radio wave. I've been around radio since I was 11. I'm now 72. And I can tell you, I've never seen a radio wave except when it's displayed on a wave meter or some device that's built to detect it and display its properties. So, directed energy weapons are not new. The research, I think, goes back to the late 30s and 40s. A lot of it made a leap forward. The technology did when the vacuum tube was invented, and we had big tubes and televisions, and that whole thing, along with radar, really enabled the field to blossom. Now, what is the field? The field of inquiry is using radio waves. How can I, or can I even affect the behavior of a human being? And what is that? What are those effects that radio waves induce? And the thing that is difficult to answer and respond to is, since frequencies vary from very low frequencies, and I would point to the average person thinking about the radio dial on a radio in a car. Everybody knows the bottom end of the radio spectrum in their car is something like 500 or 580, and that's some value, and it's up to about 1.6 or 1600. Well, those are frequencies. At those frequencies, radio waves are pretty harmless. And that's why it's popular to use those frequencies for radio broadcasts. But once you get up into the 100 megahertz or 150, 300, 500, 800 megahertz, signals can hurt flesh if you're close enough and if they're powerful enough. And if they're aimed at you specifically, they can burn skin, they can burn flesh. I remember as a young soldier back in the 60s, I was warned, never walk in front of a radar for this very reason. It may actually, make you sterile. Simply by the effects of the microwaves in those conditions. And that's why you think of your microwave oven as something harmful. You never want to put you see what happens when you over microwave meat. It will literally burn. Well, and it's true of these weapons too.
Well, we have a problem with many, many more people having problems conceiving and, you know, reproducing. Could it be tied to some things going on, or there isn't enough evidence at this point?
Well, I don't, you know, you could argue about whether it's purposeful or not, but I do think there's enough ambient, free-floating, if you will, energy in some environments that you really do have to question what is a safe level of exposure to electromagnetic fields, for example. I know some people who live in rehabbed apartment buildings that have been turned into condos that experience very high levels of electromagnetic readings. The normal on Earth is about 50, but I've seen the values as high as 800 or 900. Mm. And they tend to be associated with places along a wall where electrical lines are running. And what's happened in some of these rehab buildings is, rather than balancing the routing of electrical wires, they've all been stuffed into one corner and run up a building somewhere. And whenever you have multiple electrical lines pulled together in one spot, you get a huge magnification in the electromagnetic force that's being radiated. Exposure to that over long time can cause problems. It's not safe. So I don't think we as a society have done a good job of regulating these kinds of issues. Most people don't know what's happening to them because they aren't told about it. It's invisible. So it's probably good if people were to download an app onto their phone. There is such an app. It will measure EMF, electromagnetic force. And you can walk around with your phone and actually detect some of the levels in your own living spaces.
Oh, that would be really great for people.
Yeah, exactly. Just be aware of it. Mm-hmm. And then ask your doctor. If you see a level, tell them, I'm seeing this reading of 700. And is that something I should worry about?
Well, do you think that doctors... Do you think that most doctors even know?
I don't know, but you could start the conversation.
Yes,
and if he doesn't
great.
Know, yeah, I mean, and just download an article on it. Try to get one that is, positioned in good science. Try to avoid hysterical kinds of accounts and so forth. Again, because there are people who believe things that aren't really true. They hear the story. They mix it with other things. You can't believe how many people I know who believe satellites are up there beaming down signals aimed at them individually.
Yeah, and then you start looking like a nut job, and then it discredits the whole thing.
That's right. And so the true story is, I know the government is authorized to do research on these kinds of weapons. And the research it can be for crowd control. It can be for intelligence purposes, because microwaves can cause substances on glass and other things to vibrate. And if you can detect the vibrations and there's a conversation going on in a room, you can actually trap the conversation and backward engineer the voice. So there's very interesting applications that probably have some validity, but it can be misused again if in the wrong hands. So now we have this Cuban embassy thing. What's going on there? I know the Soviet Union was deeply involved in this kind of research 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where they took the technology, but is it possible that the Cubans got their hands on it and were just having fun with embassy people in the U.S. embassy? Yeah, I think that's possible. Or were they trying to use it to derive intelligence and misused it by accident and end up radiating some people? So I don't know, but it doesn't surprise me. It's not fantasy. It's explainable, I think, by physics.
Well, there's a case where the Russian diplomats were exposed to radiation, and the United States knew about it, and there was experimenting going on, and then they had a much higher level of cancer within those workers. There was court cases and everything, and then they ended up they shut it down, and I don't know. Yeah. They didn't want people to know, but the truth is they really did develop cancer. There's some research in that area.
Yes. And I believe that's true. Now, what I'm doing with Bill Binney is we helped a small group to put together a survey. As you know, there's been much written about this. A lot of it gets kind of out of control, and people really don't go at this in a rational way. And Bill and I want to put some rational science behind it. What I mean is, we want to evaluate a survey that we've put out there, the results of which may give us some data that will point us to look for certain technologies that might explain symptoms that are being witnessed. Now, the good news is we've only had 550 people respond to this survey. We tried to publish it worldwide, and we do have sort of worldwide response, but the most of the response has been from the United States. And I would have expected that anyway. But we're not at the data analysis point yet. That's going to commence in the next, I'd say probably 6 to 8 weeks. And we've got some very learned people in physics and science that are going to join us in that analysis. We're going to keep it private. We're going to look for indicators and, like I say, try to match it to technologies that might explain this and find out how many cases of our that are within that 552 surveyed, how many of them really look like they are targets of this kind of technology. And then go from there and see what it tells us.
So you're going to try to differentiate people who are living in buildings that were remodeled in inappropriate yeah. ways, which is important data as well, from targeted people. And do you see that you're doing this work because you think that the government would actually do something like this?
Well, we know the government is willing to experiment on people, whether it's Tuskegee Institute or others, and chemicals, and we've sprayed soldiers with chemicals without their permission. So people are willing to cheat, and they'll say it's for the greater good that we do it. But meanwhile, the
unless
victims,
it was them or their own children,
exactly.
And then suddenly it's not the greater good.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay, you have been targeted by NSA and the government for your whistleblowing activities, and you're part of that whistleblowing organization. What happened? What have you been through?
Well, you know, it's shocking when it happens to you. And of course, the way we found out about it was the FBI banging on our door and wanting me to open it, in my case. Benny told you his story, I'm sure, about he was in the shower. I was not. I actually saw this group of about a dozen FBI agents cross the lawn in front of me. I was sitting at a computer at home looking out the window, and I see these strangers, and I look out and I say, I see the gold FBI on the back of the uniform. And I thought to myself, I better get to the front door. I don't know if they're going to break it down, but I want to try to open it. And open it the right way so we don't have damage to the house. So I ran up there and did that and let them in. They showed me their badges. They showed me the affidavit they had, giving them the right to search the place. They put me outside on the back porch and told me to sit. And they babysat me there for the next 7.5 hours. My mother-in-law was put on a couch with my daughter. The dog was locked up in the bathroom. My wife was not at home, or my youngest daughter. They came home to find 12 or 13 FBI vehicles in the driveway. They wondered what went wrong. They thought something had happened. Well, it did. We got raided. So they brought them into the house, sat them down, and just kept everybody quiet and made us sit for the next 7.5 hours while they searched the house, took our computers, anything digital, phones, any notes they could find. You know, that their technique is just to grab a bunch of data and then take it away and analyze it to see if we're bad people. Well, they found out we weren't.
Did they give you your stuff back?
Only with a fight. They trickled it back to us over a period of about 4 years, and then didn't want to return the hard drives from the computers. And we took them to court, Bill Binney, myself, Ed Loomis, one of the other whistleblowers from Indiana, from NSA, and Tom Drake. Diane Rourke could not join us. She was the lady from the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence that helped blow the whistle with us. And that's because she lived outside of Maryland. She lived in Oregon at that time and had to file a separate case against them from that point. So anyway, we went into court. We did not hire a lawyer, didn't need one. We knew this issue. We knew more than any lawyer would, and we challenged them, and the judge found in our favor, and they ordered the government to return the hard drives. Now, or at least the information from the hard drives, let's put it that way.
They didn't to return the actual physical stuff that's yours, the hard drive.
Yeah,
the physical hard drive is yours. Okay.
Yeah, no, they kept the actual hard drive because they claimed there was information that was sensitive to the NSA Act of 1959, which protects the names of individuals who work at NSA. And yes, we had mentioned names in emails. As we contemplated our complaint. And so they convinced the judge that those hard drives cannot be returned. The data could. Less a few of these emails that name people's names. And so we did get all the data back and brand new hard drives that were blank so that we could put them back in the computers, reload the operating system, and at least have operating computers again. Now, what's interesting about that case, it set a precedent. Until this case was ruled, the FBI traditionally would raid people, take stuff out of their homes, store it in the FBI warehouses, and never, ever give it back, even if they didn't prosecute you.
They can just take whatever they want.
Cars, all kinds of things. Our case was the first time to challenge the right of the FBI to keep things they didn't deserve to keep. When no crime has been committed, the judge agreed and ordered the FBI to return our printers, phones, computers, less the original hard drive, but did order them to return the data that didn't contain NSA names. You know, everything else
sure.
on the drive.
Now, this is where you say the judicial system is corrupt, because they can get an affidavit for anything. Because I know that FBI has gone into businesses and essentially took everything that allowed them to run a business.
You are absolutely right. There's something wrong with these judges who are approached by the law enforcement authorities. It's like they want to please law enforcement, and they willy-nilly, I think, in many cases, sign the okay to raid a person's business or home. I don't think the criteria placed on the FBI that they have to meet to get a warrant is enforced very well. There's a bias against the average citizen, that they and the credibility goes to the FBI. Now, when I read the affidavit used to raid Binney, me, Loomis, and Rourke, it was the same affidavit in all those cases. It was not different. They attached 15 paragraphs of things they said they wanted to look at in our houses. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with what is called the law of particularity, but it's a requirement. It's kind of attached to the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution that says you cannot be searched. The privacy of you cannot be violated except upon proof of causal information, evidence, probable cause. And when they came to our homes and we read these affidavits, the probable cause was some book a CIA guy wrote. The probable cause was a newspaper issued by the New York Times. We had nothing to do with those things, but yet, and they showed no evidence that we were connected to them, but the judge signed the warrant anyway. And when you look at the 15 paragraphs of things to search, that's not a particular warrant focused on particular items. It's a general search, which is prohibited by the Constitution. You can't just go into a home and say, I want to see everything.
Okay. And just willy-nilly do it. And they do that to
exactly.
businesses that they are questionable whether they should be able to go into that business, or it almost seems like they do that because they don't want them to compete with others, kind of like what we're doing in the media now. They're taking out some powerful player, or they're competing with a powerful player, so they use that to go in, take out those businesses so they don't compete with their friends.
That's exactly right. It's misuse. It's abuse of power, extraordinary power. And people's lives can be ruined.
And they have been.
And have been. Exactly right.
Well, you know, the black agencies, the lack of transparency just breeds corruption. We know that. If they can do whatever they want, that's where the bad guys flourish. Do you ever foresee, you know, without this revolution needing to happen, do you foresee transparency coming to our intelligence agencies?
You know, I do, but I think the normal human response by the people in those agencies will be not to be transparent. You know, when it gets to the subject of classified information, even NSA professionals, most of them, could not articulate well why they classified something top secret instead of confidential. Or argue that something classified top secret isn't even top secret. And so the tendency is to, you know the term CYA?
Exactly. That's
yes.
my point.
And that's what they do.
If you do anything wrong, it better be top secret.
Exactly.
That's
right.
The problem.
So studies have been done. I researched this a little bit to help with the Tom Drake defense. when he was persecuted by the court, NSA, DOJ. Up to 90% of all classified things in the intelligence community are not properly classified. Now, let's just say of that 90%, let's say 30% isn't even classified. That's 30% of all data in the intelligence community, terabytes of it, that should not be classified and that should be open to public inspection, but it's not. And we know that these agencies, when embarrassed or when they do something wrong, they write reports and classify them so that the results cannot be shared with the outside public. The news media can't get a hold of them. Or if they do and they demand a FOIA response, they redact 90% of what's in the report, and you get a sort of useless document. This is a sham. Congress is supposed to oversee all this, but rather than be overseers, they've become complicit in the cover-ups. Mm-hmm. They've become friends and not foes. You know, the Church Committee, back in 1975, when it was discovered that NSA was spying on Martin Luther King, on Vietnam War vets, on other people, including Senator Church himself, was spied on by NSA. They established the two committees to oversee NSA so that such a violation of the privacy of American citizens would not happen again. Not only is it happening again, it's happening in spades.
Way more than it ever has before.
Ever before.
This is at a whole nother level.
Whole nother level.
Well, you're doing such great work. How can people learn more about you, support you, and help do things that'll help our country get back on the right track?
Well, the quick way is to Google William Binney, Bill Binney, or Kirk Wiebe, or J. Kirk Wiebe, and they'll find a lot there that they can look at. We've been on a number of media shows over the years. We've even gotten involved in some legal cases that are challenging NSA in a few of the circuit courts here in the country. Bill has done that as well. And we're briefing people, students, universities, about mass surveillance, the threats, what it means to people. And also beginning to do what you're doing, and that is talking to people about ethics, because there's an ethical piece to this if we're ever going to solve it. So it's important not to skip over that. To at least make people think about it, get them to think about it. And people are generally interested, but they often say, what can we do? And I don't know what democracy these people might or might not live in, what country, but you have to object to those in authority, whether it's your parliamentarians, whether it's your members of Congress, but you have to do it with a phone call. Don't be satisfied with an email. Dial them. That gets someone on the other end of the phone, and just tell them this is a violation of our rights. And oh, by the way, we know it can be done legally by protecting the privacy of every person sucked up into mass surveillance through encryption and only unencrypting their identity when there's evidence that they've done something wrong and it has been duly blessed by a court, and not a FISA court, a Article III court, which is the kind of court the Constitution talks about where you have a chance to get a hearing in front of your peers if the judge so orders it. So we've got to straighten out and get back on the three pillars of our form of government in order to get this straightened out. Demand it.
Demand it. Demand truth, integrity.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So is there a website? Just Google you, no specific website. I had with
Not
Bill Binney,
yet.
I had them go to whistleblower.org. Is
yes.
that a place that you would recommend?
You will find that through a Google search. There's nothing there that you won't find just through a Google search of our names. Now, this is going to change a little bit. the startup company that we're dealing with here in the Netherlands is creating a web page for Bill Binney and Kirk Wiebe, and that will be posted and probably operational or available after the first of the year. And you would say, yeah, but that's going to be business related. Not really. It's business related only in that the business wants people to know our background and the ethics behind, yes, we're involved in a business effort, but what comes with it is not blind desire to get rich. It's desire to create privacy by design in IT solutions for companies and businesses who want to protect identities. It's part of the whole philosophy of how do you do data gathering? Google is spying on everyone as well. Everybody knows it for advertisement purposes and to make money. Well, we think what's happening in Europe will be eventually get to the U.S. Europe has told all businesses that all people in your databases have to be protected, because if that data ever gets out, we're going to fine you 20 million euros. Now, this compliance is tough, and it's going to come into effect in May of next year. We don't have anything like that in the U.S., that kind of teeth being put into privacy protection. So we're trying to fit this model here and even advise the European Union on encryption techniques to make it really solid encryption and not easy to break.
Excellent.
Stop.
So glad you're out there doing what you're doing. We need you. We need your colleagues. We need more people like you making a difference. We need other people in the NSA like Snowden, people coming out like you and not being afraid to stand up for what's right. And I think there's a lot of people in the CIA, the NSA, FBI that are afraid to come out.
I do too. And, you know, I worry the dilemma they're in is if they come out, they will lose their jobs and suddenly their family incomes are gone. And you know what should happen? Sarah, if we were truly a noble country again, Congress would establish a reward for whistleblowing.
They have one. They're just not using it, right?
That's exactly right. They defeat it all the time. And what they need to say is any whistleblower that comes forth within government, and I don't care what part of government, whether it's intelligence or law enforcement, don't care. If you come forth with a valid whistleblower complaint, you will be rewarded with $2 million. Now, we waste more than that on aircraft that we build for the Pentagon. This is not a lot of money. But for a whistleblower, it means I can survive even if I'm shunned by every business after having whistleblowed. I can live. I can have a family, kids. Send them to school.
Yeah, don't make their penalty of whistleblowing their inability to take care of their family.
Exactly.
Give them the means to survive, and then you'll start seeing things get cleaned up.
Absolutely. And why not?
Exactly.
So I would advise people to, when you call to complain about surveillance, take an additional 120 seconds and say, by the way, let's reward whistleblowers financially so they don't lose their livelihood.
Well,
let's make it possible. And reward truth-telling.
Well, let's end it with that. I'm running out of time. I thank you so much, and I hope you'll come back with your survey and different things that you have going on and keep us posted on how all that's working out.
Would love to, and kudos to you for doing what you do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.